Cardinal Wilfrid Fox Napier, Archbishop of Durban in South Africa, is here at the Vatican to participate in the upcoming conclave. Since arriving, he has been participating in the Cardinal's general congregations to prepare for the conclave. I spoke with him just before he joined a prayer service in St. Peter's Basilica on Wednesday evening. He told me of his own feelings and emotions during this particular time in history and of the feelings and hopes of the faithful in his own particular geographical area.
In South Africa, are people interested in the conclave, in what's happening in the church?
Very much so. You know, there's been I'm on Twitter and
I've
got a lot of tweets about it. People all around sending their prayers and even messages from bishops saying their people are praying with us and for us. And so I think there's a real sense this time that through these social media and so on, social networks, and there is the possibility of people being engaged in something that's taking place even at a remote distance.
Now, you are in Rome for the congregations. From your perspective, from a Southern African perspective, what kind of figure do you think we'll be looking for? What kind of characteristics would a new leader need in this very particular moment of history?
I see. I'm a bit biased because I picked up from Pope John Paul so much of what was his characteristics. And how he translated that into a vision for the church. First of all, the theology of the body, that whole thing which at the time he was giving those talks didn't seem to make that much of an impact. But since then, it really come out as this is a wonderful way of reaffirming just how unique a creation the human person is. And how because of that uniqueness, they need to be given special reverence and special respect. So I think from John Paul one would have learned the value of human life, the value of the human person. But he also wanted that value to be heightened by the new evangelization. He was the first one to use that expression, the new evangelization. Pope Benedict took it up then and he really gave it a much clearer definition. I always remember the day he was elected, how he put on the table what was going to be his sort of vision for the church. Reconciliation was going to be one of the things. And we look at his interactions with the Society of Pius X and other groupings within the church that are a little bit off the track. He went out of his way to try and bring reconciliation about. Some would say he bent over too far backwards. But that was his vision. Secondly, when he explained why Benedict was the name that he chose, he said Saint Benedict was instrumental at the time when the Roman Empire had fallen apart, the church was in disarray. And he was the instrument used with the monastic life that he established of rebuilding the church, rebuilding the faith, renewing the faith, and rebuilding the church. And you could see with a lot of what Pope Benedict did, that he was doing precisely that, renewing the faith and trying to rebuild the church, its credibility, its effectiveness, and so forth. And the third and most important thing that came out of both Pope John Paul and Pope Benedict was the centrality of Christ. I mean, Pope Benedict was the first one I've heard of the popes talking about an encounter with Jesus. It was the language that was normally with Pentecostals and so on. And he used that language, encounter with Christ, and the stories from the Gospels were very much uppermost then. Come and see. They spent the day with him. So that whole thing about prayer and the centrality of Christ. And that's what I see from Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul II. So the characteristics, they've laid the foundation. I think the new pope will need to be somebody who is aware of that, is conscious of that, those foundations that are there, and that is committed to building on them. Building is more on a foundation is trickier than I think putting down the foundations. Therefore, I think we'd have to have a fairly lengthy pontificate following this one year. And so looking at a younger person, that'd be one thing. Secondly, I think he's going to be from among us, I believe. So he will need to have heard, I think, from the different sectors of the church what the issues are, how the church in those places is already trying to tackle those issues, and what role the Pope, central level, what role he can play to influence that.
That's what you're doing at the moment. Aren't you all getting to know each other even better and talking about your own areas? Your own issues of concern your own geographical areas.
We haven't gone into them as yet, into those geographical areas, but areas of concern have been raised. We and the Africans just informally have met a couple of times, and we've looked at what are the issues that we would like to share with the church from the other parts of the world. And I think one of the concerns that we have is the church has been very centered on Europe. You know, it's the majority of the popes are from here, majority cardinals are from here, bishops are from here, missionaries in our countries were from Europe. So there's a genuine, you know, there's a close relationship with Europe, which is normal, I think, in these circumstances. But maybe Europe now, because it's gone into crisis, is concentrating on itself and forgetting that there are answers to some of the issues, some of the problems that can come from outside. And I think this is where our concern would be as Africans. What can we bring to the consciousness of the church in Europe that maybe makes them more aware of what's going on out there, but at the same time makes them look at alternative solutions to the issues?
I was speaking to a Vaticanista, a Vatican observer, the other day, and he said something that I found interesting. He was speaking of how the new generations in Europe have, they're not even non-believers or atheists. They seem to have completely drifted away, as if it wasn't their concern anymore to have a spiritual reference point. That isn't the fact in Africa, is it?
No. I think that's where one of the major differences with Africa is that God has still got a very, very important part in the people's lives. And possibly it's because Africa just seems to go from one political or social or health crisis to another. And you're reminded all the time of your fallibility. For instance, I mean, we thought we were getting on top of things like malaria, polio, and so on and so forth. And then comes HIV and AIDS. We think we're getting on top of the HIV and AIDS, and then comes this drug-resistant types of TB, which are even more devastating than the HIV virus, which is controllable with antiretrovirals. So in a way, our fallibility as human beings and our need for somebody who's more secure and gives us security, I think is something that people experience on a day-to-day basis. And therefore, religion still has a major part to play. Finally, I think a third point, I think, is that the African has always had a very strong connection with the spirit world. We have tried to convert it by saying it's a community of saints. But for most Africans, it's their family, it's their ancestors, but it's a spirit world that's real. And they have an impact on life on the earth as well.
Tell me, what's it like to be here again, Cardinal Napier, for this occasion? What are your feelings here in Rome at this very special moment in history?
The first thing that's quite different this time is we know what to expect along the way. Even though that was my expectation, may be governed by what I know now, which I didn't know when I came over the first time. The Constitution, I hadn't read it, and so I wasn't aware of what was going to actually be taking place. This time, as soon as I heard the Pope had resigned, I got it out and I went through it in some detail because I knew it would be asked about how it works and so on. So I feel more familiar with that this time. But there's a difference. There's no mourning period. There's no Pope to bury. And that distracted us somewhat.
It's nice, isn't it? Yeah. In that sense, that we don't have to mourn.
Yeah.
Because that was so sad.
That was sad. And you know, and there's something very special about it. It's very emotive about it. This time, maybe we're taken a little bit off guard. I didn't expect Pope Benedict to resign just before Easter, knowing how important Easter, especially Good Friday, has always been to him. And then also the World Youth Day coming up soon. And I thought, Look, it never was far from, I never did believe that the Pope would not resign. I said if any Pope would resign, it would be Benedict XVI. Just from his, he's a very principled man, and I think that if he felt, look, this job needs 100% and I'm only giving 85, he would say, let me step aside and leave somebody else to take it on. But it was the timing of it that really shocked me. I thought, you know, it can't be true. And here we are now sitting here, and we're under a certain amount of self-imposed pressure. We want to find out as much as we can, get as familiar with each other as we can, try to identify possible candidates. And at the same time, we know the longer we spend doing that, the more difficult it is to get back home for Easter.
Finally, this evening, you are, after leaving here, you're going to a Mass in St. Peter's Basilica.
No, it's actually it's just a holy hour.
Oh, it's a holy hour. Yes, is it a first for this pre-conclave period, or was it something that happened last time you were at
the conclave? No, it arose out of one of the discussions in the congregation to say, look, we know the people out there are praying for us. They're giving us messages left, right and center. But we also need to do something ourselves and have a period of really intense prayer. And then this was the decision that was taken, that we come up and have this holy hour tonight.
How important are the prayers of the people outside?
Oh, very much so. You know, I'm on Twitter, I keep on referring to people to the fact that they're praying for us and asking them to intensify those prayers. And one of the thoughts that came to me this morning was, every stage that we're taking, you can almost feel the prayers supporting us, you know. And I think that kind of spiritual union is very important, as it's going to in some way affect how we see the new Pope. Is it going to be somebody? It has to be somebody who's a pastor, who's able to reach out and touch people's lives. Interestingly enough, for an academic, Pope Benedict did a very, very good job of touching people's lives, a very shy, retiring kind of person. And yet he had that ability just to reach out.
He won them over, didn't he?
Absolutely. Mm. I think his visit to Britain was about the epitome of how well he was able to read the mood and how to respond and actually supersede the mood that was there. There were some touches in that visit that were absolutely out of this world. I watched the one day, the program, when he was going to go for that adoration in Hyde Park. And one of the television journalists, obviously her brief was, go out there and find out how people feel about the way that the church has handled the sex abuse things and how that's going to affect the way the visit is going. And for about 10, 15 minutes, maybe longer, everyone she went to, her first question was, don't you think the visitor is going to be spoiled by the sex abuse thing? People looked at her and just say, we've come to see the Pope. And it went on. She dropped that line of questioning completely. And I remember that by the end of that visit, you could almost see David Cameron walking on air. He was so delighted with the impact of what Pope Benedict had done, mentioning and sympathizing with the people of Coventry. On the day that Cardinal Newman was being beatified, his first thought was those people who had suffered in the bombing of Coventry and I think Coventry, Birmingham, and sympathizing with them and recalling that event and praying for the people who had perished. I think those are some fantastic touches there. And that was one of the ways in which I thought, gee, this Pope really has a gift of coming out beyond himself, because he's basically a very shy person.
Thank you so much, Cardinal. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Except to wish the listeners a very happy Easter.
Thank you.
And a good preparation for Easter, and also to keep the prayers flowing. We need them, especially when it comes to the time of deciding when the conclave is going to be, and when we're in conclave, who's going to be the Pope who emerges.